Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
She'll fight on the beaches.
Oh, wait, man. These are the things that made England.
She'll fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body, but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Things That Made England, to the final rendition of the English Bun series. As ever, this is a team effort, so I'm joined by Fiona. Hello, Fiona.
Hello, and it's wonderful to be chewing our way through yet more buns.
Isn't it good? Or indeed, as Brian Clough might have said, I'd just like to say how nice it is for you to meet me.
I love Cloughy.
Cloughy had something of a, didn't lack self-confidence, the lad, did he?
You know, that one, my favourite Clough line was that wonderful, Rome wasn't built in a day. But on the other hand, I wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. I was in, you had another one, actually. Yes. I wouldn't say I'm in the top league of football managers, but I am in the top one.
Fantastic.
Anyway, there you go, Brian Clough. Right. So this, in this third and final episode, we are doing muffins and crumpets, cruffins and muppets. So I thought I'd do them together since they're often confused. So I say that. I don't think the rest of the world confuses them, actually. I think it's just me that confuses them.
Well, I think, at least in America, they don't know what crumpets are.
Okay, well, we'll educate them.
You can get them at good supermarkets. And they have a variety of muffins, which we're going to talk about. There's the English muffin, and then there's the muffin, which isn't a muffin.
Okay, so a bit like the beet and the English beet. There we go. So both cruffins and mumpets are, of course, very delicious. But I was looking up some references, and one E. Ruddock, who was an author on diet in 1879, wrote that muffins and crumpets were both very indigestible. Quote, end quote.
He can't have had much butter on his.
Can't have done. And I have to say that I have painlessly digested many of both over the years without any trouble whatsoever. So maybe, you know, pop in an extra book by the loo just in case so that you can have a good read of it after your muffins. The muffin is a quite delicious bun type affair, surprisingly delicious so, because it looks sort of rather ordinary. It's a slightly chewy bun with a sort of slightly crunchy top. They're not confused, as you mentioned, Fiona, with the American muffin, a much more cakey, sweeter type of thing. Also nice, but yeah, just not the type of muffin we're talking about today.
Although in America, we do have what they call the English muffin. Mm-hmm. And the recipe for these English muffins, their proper muffin recipes, was brought over to America by a Devonshire man. Uh-huh. We're back in Devon. Uh-huh. Samuel Thomas of Plymouth, who founded the Thomas Bakery in New York in the 1800s. And Thomas's English muffins are very much a staple of American life, although I'm sorry to say they're usually only used as a resting place for eggs and bacon and other unnecessary things.
Well, on the other hand, eggs and bacon, everything's better than eggs and bacon as well, aren't they? Eggs, bacon,
yes,
butter, jam.
I always confuse the dickens out of the coffee shop when I go in and ask for an English muffin toasted with butter.
Right.
And no, I don't want egg, cheese, bacon,
right,
sausage, the kitchen sink thrown on it. Thank you very much. They see it as a breakfast food.
Right.
And in doing so, they might well have gone back to the original idea of the muffin, which was originally made from leftover bread and biscuit dough and mashed potatoes. in which the cook fried on a hot griddle to produce that light, crispy muffin. They were very much a working class treat until posh folk decided that they wanted in on the goodness, and they became fancier, and they became the most fancied bread in England, and muffin factories, each with their own recipe for making their muffin, sprung up, and these muffins could be split and toasted over an open fire and served with various toppings. That was the research I've done in a couple of folklore books. Excellent. That I have.
Very nice, yeah. Very good. Okay, so muffin once meant the same as crumpet in terms of its slang sense. And you know what that is, don't you? So
a soft bread?
No, not a soft bread. It's slang sense. So that's
from... Oh, I see.
Yes.
It's as in muffin and crumpet.
Fiona, you make me feel quite hot under the collar. So it comes from Canada, apparently, which is sort of mildly interesting. And here is a quote from 1856, okay? My wife, Jane, really hated this quote and gave me, you know, a certain amount of grief for quoting it. It's not that it's horrid, but anyway. So here it is. Here's a quote from 1856. Every unmarried gentleman who chooses to do so selects a young lady to be his companion in the numerous amusements of the season. When she acquiesces, she is called a muffin.
Bloody hell. That's okay. Horrid. Every woman listening's going to do the same that I did. Oh,
yes.
For God.
Okay, well, there you go. So thoroughly horrid. And that slang sense has crossed over to crumpet, as seen in carry-on movies, often used in the slang sense. So another source for the word, the source of the word is moufflé, potentially, soft bread in French, or muffa, Middle German. It has several regional versions, as indeed you've mentioned, or it once did anyway. So muffin in Yorkshire in the 18th century, which sounds like my grandmother who would talk about cushions and that sort of thing. Moffin in Lancashire. So trust Yorkshire and Lancashire to be at loggerheads. Right?
They are griddled as opposed to baked buns.
I see. I think that's a thing that it took me a long while to get my head around. And yes, absolutely. That is absolutely correct. So there is a famous rhyme, which I think appears in Shrek. Do you know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man? Do you know the Muffin Man who lives on Drury Lane? Yes, I know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man. Not great on the lyrics, it has to be said. Yes, I know the Muffin Man who lives on
Drury Lane.
Yes. So, you know, obviously demanding lyrics, but, you know, if you work at it, you can get hold of it. So often there were fresh breads delivered, especially in London. So the Muffin Man would ring a bell. So irritating that Parliament apparently tried to ban them. Recipes in the 18th century survive, although they might well have been older. There might have been older recipes, just haven't come down to us.
I think there must have been, yeah.
Yeah, probably. So there are a variety of the alternatives of muffin. There is one idea that they were invented in Wales in the 10th or 11th centuries, along with the longbow.
Oh, the longbow, yes, but not the muffin.
I'm constantly talking about the longbow because I realise that you wrongly believe the longbow is Welsh rather than English.
Now, I'm the first to shout for Wales and her invention of most things magnificent, including myself and the longbow.
Obviously.
But the muffin was not born in Wales alone,
right,
but is rather part of the griddle cake tradition. And perhaps it's because in Wales, we do a lot more of the griddling cake type of thing rather than the baking buns that this myth came about. But I think they are nationwide.
There is a tradition, apparently, which I couldn't find any references for, but it came up in a US website, which had them invented in 1894, which is very specific, invented in the US, and apparently they were not known in England until the 1990s.
I think this comes from a misunderstanding of aforementioned Mr. Thomas of Devon,
right,
who brought his recipe to America. Okay. And it could be that Thomas's English Muffin Company, Thomas's English Muffins are a big company in the United States, it could be a misunderstanding of that whole situation.
Right. Okay, very good. So which one should I cook if I have to make a choice, crumpet or muffin?
I was thinking of breaking out my crumpet ring, which we'll discuss in a minute, and try out crumpet making. So if you make muffins, I'll make crumpets.
Okay, that's a deal.
I know I have a recipe for crumpets. I have an ancient book, which I must try and copy some of the pages to show folk, of recipes, my family recipe book that I've been collecting since 1970, and I have crumpet recipes.
Oh, that'd be very
there.
Good.
All handwritten by me, complete with butter stains.
Right. Okay. So for the muffin, you essentially make a dough and cook them after they've risen, and you prove them, and then you cook them on a griddle. They differ from the crumpet in that the latter, the crumpet, has a much looser batter,
absolutely,
which is why you need a crumpet ring, of course. And I found in Elizabeth David's book some instructions on how to toast them. Seriously?
Although it has to be said, as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, I'm about as old as Methuselah.
Yes, I'm going to start calling you Fiona Methuselah.
And when I was a child, we toasted our crumpets and our muffins at the fireplace with a toasting fork.
Okay, so talking about crumpets then rather than muffins. Crumpet is apparently made not from a dough, like the muffin, but from a batter. What is the difference between a batter and a dough, Fiona?
Oh, there we're getting into really technical stuff that I know, but I can't explain.
Right. Well, I don't know, and I can't explain either. So I assumed it's because it's just looser. So presumably you don't rise it quite the same way.
Makes sense. I don't know.
If you can find the words, get back to us. So a crumpet is very similar to the longbow, actually, in that ownership is claimed by both Welsh and English, rather than it being able to shoot an arrow 600 yards at £50 a square inch. So the Welsh lay claim to the crumpet, along with their cousins, the Cornish and the Bretons, who are, of course, all in cahoots.
I've never heard this. I make crempog. I make crempog.
Oh, is that right?
I made my grandson crempog last week. Crempogs are pancakes.
Right, they're not crumpets.
Not crumpets. Mm-hmm. Crempogs are not crumpets.
So the English dictionary traces the possible etymology of crumpet back to John Blessed Wycliffe, Morning Star of Protestantism, of course, which is quite a while ago. So Wycliffe, when he wasn't dissing the Pope or being dug up to be burnt, referred to a crumpet cake, crumpet referring to something gnarled or crumpled. Meanwhile, the Scots also tried to get in on the act with a Scotch crumpet, which is in fact a small pancake that I used to eat by the metric ton. Something that when I was a lad, we called drop scones, and I ate them with, guess what, butter and jam.
Jam.
Because one of my mother's favourite sayings was, fill up on jam. I think it was a war thing. But that was one of my favourite sayings of my mother, actually. Other sayings that she had, like, why don't you tidy up your bedroom? Were less popular to me. But fill up with jam, perfect, fill up on bread and jam. So the point about the drop scone or Scotch pancake is it's not a crumpet.
Now, and I'm personally am of the opinion that Wycliffe was correct. It was in 1382 when he referred to the crumpet cake. The original crumpet is said to be Anglo-Saxon, initially hard pancakes baked on a griddle with a crumpled appearance. Now, crempog or crepe or English-style pancakes, which I make on a regular basis. I offer as a savoury, actually. One of my kids' favourite dishes were crempog. I would fill them with different things or let the children fill them with ham and leek or tomato and cheese and a parsley sauce or a bechamel sauce. And they're delicious, not to be confused with American pancakes, which are thick. They are made with baking powder and buttermilk in the recipe, and often sugar in the batter. So the 1649 Oxford Dictionary, referring to crumpet, described it as a mixture of buckwheat flour, beaten egg, milk, and baking powder. These were different from the more familiar crumpets of the Victorian era. When yeast was added to the dough, the crumpet is griddled on a ring mold to hold the batter while it is baked. Crumpet makers of the Midlands, yay, and developed the characteristic which appeared on top of the crumpet when it's cooked by adding extra baking powder. That's what makes the wonderful holes in them, the soft, spongy crumpet. They're wonderful holes, which of course means that you put the batter in and it dribbles through, a bit like lardy cake in that way.
I like lardy cake, bit of dribbling fat.
But I just don't think that, other than the fact that they are made with a batter, plain flour, eggs, milk, and other things, I just don't think that they are Welsh and the same as crempog.
So that, Fiona, brings me kicking and screaming to the word pikelet, because I have it on good authority that a drop scone in Australia and New Zealand is called a pikelet. Happy to be corrected on that one by somebody from Oz or New Zealand. So pikelet, this is complicated because to my mind, a pikelet was just the word we used for crumpet in the true heart of England, namely the Midlands, and also used it in the frozen wastes of the north above the Trent. But the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, would actually have us believe that it's actually a crumpet, but it's just smaller and harder. I mean, I must admit, I would like to confirm that many of the folks north of the Trent are indeed smaller and harder. But I prefer Dora Hartley's identification of the Midlands variation of the pikelet as thick and spongy, because in the Midlands we like to think of ourselves as thick and spongy. And indeed, many of my best friends are thick and spongy.
I'm thick and spongy, but I'm from the south and west.
Well, you know, you've obviously got a bit of Midland in you.
No, not as far as I know. To me, a pikelet is a crumpet made without the benefit of a crumpet ring to hold its shape. In other words, it's the same mix, but
right,
it spreads
so it's rather
in
more
the pan
like
a drop scone.
Or a pancake. Do we think the pikelet is Welsh?
No, we do not. And I know what you're going to say, that it is corruption of a Welsh bread, batter puglet, or pitchy bread. But Thomas Darlington, in his book, The Folk Speech of South Cheshire, published in 1887.
That sounds like a humdinger.
It's a thriller minute.
Give me 10 copies of that.
They're very hard to find, but you can find them.
I think you're going to find that. I mean, I have hypersonic and high temperature gas dynamics on my shelf, but I don't think that competes with the folk speech of South Cheshire.
Well, you know, I'm a folklorist, so I troll around and find obscure books. So Thomas Darlington, in his book, The Folk Speech of South Cheshire, claims that the word pikelet is not Welsh, but comes from an old English word long forgotten, and that the word wandered into Wales rather than from Wales to England. To back his claim, he had a Professor Rees of Carnarvon weigh in on the subject. Professor Rees pointed out that the word was pronounced Barra Pikelet in North Wales, which is not the same as Barra Puglid, and that pitchy bread doesn't make sense, as it isn't blackened or pitchy, or it shouldn't be.
Right. I'm going to bow to your very obviously superior knowledge on this.
Not mine, Mr. Thomas Darlington, yes. Professor Rees of Carnarvon.
Superior knowledge of yours in the sense that you've actually bought and read a book called The Folk Speech of South Cheshire, I think deserves some recognition.
Ah, I have a whole obscure library. And I personally think it began in Cheshire.
Well, something's got to begin in Cheshire, hasn't it? So look, I've warbled on about language. We've warbled on about language for long enough. So what is a crumpet? It is a small, round, podgy griddle cake made from risen, yeasty batter, cooked on a griddle, or indeed, as we have said, using a purpose-made crumpet ring. When you cook them like a pancake, bubbles burst through the surface of the crumpet. So a signature of a good crumpet is that they are simultaneously chewy, springy, and crispy. The signature of a bad crumpet is that they come in a packet and have a slightly leathery texture, rather like my grandfather's bottom. Actually, I have no idea what my grandfather's bottom was like. And if you're listening, Grandpa, you know, from heaven, sorry and all.
I absolutely agree with you. You can get crumpets in...
What about my grandfather's bottom? Or...
I also have not, as far as I know.
It's not what he says, mate. All right, let's get off my grandfather's bottom. Go on.
I don't think I've ever seen... any bottoms from the Midlands.
Is that right? Good Lord, there's a fact. Right, well, let's not put that right today. Fiona, carry on. You were talking about, you weren't talking about bottoms.
No, I was talking about the purchasing of crumpets. You can buy them in the United States at certain good supermarkets and Aldi's sometimes, imported from Canada, and they're just not as good as an English crumpet, which is why I am inspired to break out my ancient recipe book and try making some crumpets again.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to that, although, of course, I won't be able to eat them from here. Okay, so in terms of cooking said pikelets, I'm going to try and post a recipe, actually, of traditional English crumpets. I don't know. But essentially, you create a batter with your flour, oil, sugar, and salt. Elizabeth David's advice here is to warm the ingredients. A chap called Walter Banfield suggests you add just a small amount of warm water with bicarb of soda. Then you knead it until you have a smooth and elastic batter. Leave it to rise for 1.5 hours. Beat it down. Add your bicarb thing and leave it to rise again, depending on how thick you want them. 30 minutes to 50 minutes, essentially. The longer, the lighter. To cook, pop them in crumpet rings on the griddle. And since it's batter, without the rings, of course, it would run away. So you need your rings.
See, to me, if it's in a ring, it's a crumpet. If it's not in the ring, it's a pikelet.
Right. Very good. I'm happy to accept your definition. So finally, then, I thought I'd like to end by talking briefly about the bun as part of English festivals. And once again, as I probably said before, there's no way I can be comprehensive here. I'm sure there are many more that I'm going to mention here. But in carrying out the detailed and thoroughly authoritative research for this episode, of which I did, I have to say I came across the Hong Kong Bun Festival, about which I did not know anything. And it looks far more impressive than anything Blighty has to offer. But let me try give Blighty's side of the work. So this is a bit of a walk down the darker side of English history. I refer to the Colston bun, first of all. The Colston bun is your standard spiced bun, but is specific to celebrations in Bristol, for a specific day of celebration for the city's formerly favourite son, the 18th century merchant Edward Colston. The buns were distributed to school children throughout Bristol on the 13th of November in two formats. You had your dinner plate version with 8 wedge marks on the surface and the halfpenny staver, an individual sized bun. Edward Colston was a famous philanthropist that you see in the city of Bristol, as well as being a Tory MP. However, in 2020, England was reminded that the money that Colston distributed was in part at least dirty money, because Colston was deeply involved in the buying, selling and enslavement of human beings through the Royal African Company. Colston's statue unfortunately tripped while walking by the harbour and ended up in the drink. And Bristol has been going through the process of reassessing its past. As we are all, actually. So the Colston Society disbanded after 275 years in 2020. Colston Hall is now no longer so named.
It is now the Bristol Beacon, I am happy to say. And quite right, too.
Very good.
Quite right. That's a change that will do very well for Bristol.
Indeed. So happier, or at least I assume happier news, is the Good Friday ceremony at Widow's Son Tavern in Bromley by Bow, where for over 200 years a bun has been added every Good Friday to a collection preserved at the tavern. The name and custom derived from an 18th century widow who hoped that her missing sailor son would eventually come home safely if she continued to save a bun every Easter. I did find this on the website of Historic England, which has a big list of folk ceremonies, and I'll try and put the link on the website again if I remember all these links.
Now, I have a story.
Woman.
This excited me very much. I believe I mentioned briefly in episode one of our Bunscapade that my uncle, Dennis, who was an extraordinary man, he was bound to the sea. He joined the Royal Navy at the age of 14. He served in the Navy throughout the Second World War, as did his brother, my uncle Terry, and indeed their cousins. Both he and Terry and the cousins all survived the war. Uncle Den was a passionate amateur folklorist and historian, and taught me much that I now know. And he was an expert on early radar, which is how he came to serve at RAF Manston and at RAF Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis. RAF Manston is in Kent, and it was the home of the Spitfire. And RAF Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis is out there in the Hebrides. Yes. And he was living in Manston in East Kent with my grandmother when I was little. And every Good Friday, we would go and stay with Nana and Uncle Den. And early on Good Friday morning, I would go with my Uncle Dennis to the local baker to collect fresh hot cross buns. So on Good Friday, we would buy a hot cross bun each and one for luck. We always bought one for luck. And after the first episode, I was thinking, and I do think sometimes we did have more than one each, but I do remember that we always bought one for luck. And Uncle Dennis would then take the lucky bun and he would nail it high in the beam of the old stable, which had been converted to a garage in his house. And when I asked him why, he would say, so that none of us drown. Curiouser and curiouser, because I've never come across anyone else who has done that or who did that. And I did not know until you mentioned it about the Good Friday ceremony.
Oh, the Widow's Son Tavern in Bromley by Bow. Well, maybe they're connected.
Maybe they are. Isn't that interesting?
It is very interesting.
And I remember looking at the beam and there were all these old hot cross buns up there, which never went bad, by the way.
Of course, as they don't, obviously, if they were made on Good Friday. I don't think I could nail a bun to a beam, because I think I'd have eaten the bun before it hit the beam. Impressive self-control. Very good. Right. Well, a final bun recipe. There's a tradition near my own hood in the town of Abingdon. Abingdon was stolen, actually, interestingly, by Oxfordshire in 1974. I need to say that so that Abzict.
Where should Abingdon be?
It should be in Berkshire. Thank you. It's obviously in Berkshire. I mean, it's just so obviously in Berkshire. It's south of the River Thames. Its hinterland is south of the River Thames. It's north of the River Thames. But, I mean, it's a, what's the word? It's a travesty. It's an outrage.
So we've had the Thames dividing people, the Tay dividing people, the Medway dividing people. What's the river that divides Yorkshire and Lancashire?
You got the Severn with Wales, haven't you?
Yeah.
The river, yeah, they don't have a river there. The River Ribble. Where's the River Ribble? That's up there somewhere. Interesting. Norfolk and Suffolk, the Wensum, maybe? Yeah. Don't know.
Now, in Kent, it's the only one I know of that divides a county.
We don't have any rivers in Leicestershire. We've only got one hill as well. Anyway, so Abingdon.
It should be in Berkshire.
We should be in Berkshire, but it's in fact been half inched by Oxfordshire in 1974. So bun throwing in Abingdon. This is a 400-year-old tradition. I'm assuming the buns aren't 400 years old, obviously. I think we ate all the 400-year-old buns at my school, so it can't be.
Wait a minute. You had buns at school?
We had buns at school.
You were given buns?
We were given buns.
You were so lucky. We only ever had 500-year-old bread.
Aye, we were lucky. But that, having said that, Fiona, that was after we licked the school clean with tongues.
Of course.
Falling to a Monty Python sketch. Right, so Abingdon bun throwing only takes place when the town council votes to hold a bun throwing. And it's done to mark a royal occasion. So there was one in 2011 to mark what event, Fiona? Quick quiz, what happened?
The royal wedding.
And then in 2012 at the Jubilee. So what happens is the councillors in full ceremonial robes climb to the top of the county hall and they chuck about 4,000 currant buns down at the chanting crowds filling the marketplace below. The buns are especially baked for the occasion with a crown design on top of bun, and they're often 4-4. Which is a bit difficult to believe, but there you go. The County Hall Museum apparently has a large section of buns from various bun-throwing events, and there's a cafe named after tradition, which, of course, has been closed all the way through COVID, and I have no idea whether it survived yet or not.
Oh, let's hope it has.
Let's hope it has, yes. Well, on that note, though, Fiona, and the mention of COVID, which you've managed to avoid for 3 episodes, which is good, I think we've reached the end of the English buns. I quite appreciate that I've only scratched the surface of the sugar glaze of the English bun history, and that there are a world of cakes and buns out there too. So tea breads, fruit cakes, all that sort of thing. But I'm exhausted, Fiona. I'm exhausted.
I've done enough. And I need a cup of tea and a toasted tea cake.
Yes, indeed, with lots of jam and butter. But anyway, look. So let us once more, let us this be a festival of fun. On the Facebook site, The Things That Made England. And I would be delighted to see your efforts or hear about your favourite English bun. If you're not in England, it would be nice to know if any of you have made the cultural leap to a different country and let us know about buns there. Now, roundup time. Okay, everyone, for the last edition of Buns, it falls to me to do the roundup and also to report back on the making of crumpets, which I have now completed. We managed to work up some bun construction from you all this week, once again in the Chelsea bun department, although I'm reliably informed there is a lardy cake in the oven. Figuratively speaking, but I am sure it will become literal quite soon. Anyway, Chris and Mandy produced some super-looking Belsey chuns. Congratulations. Apparently with a split between expert advice from one side and the actual work from the other. Of the decision to deploy pink icing, I have no comment other than to turn gently in my grave. Fortunately, the decision at the last minute changed to drizzling homemade honey, which does sound superb. Zach suggested fried chicken, about which I have nothing to say. I have to say, there was something of an Aussie rebellion going on in opposition to the allowable cultural norms, which extended to hot cross buns with raspberry and dark chocolate, which Bianca described as, and I quote, an evolving culinary tradition rather than sacrilege. With which statement, Rob appeared to agree, and Lee had some Aussie chocolate chip hot cross buns too. But then, birds of a feather and all that. There were some other pictures of stuff too, Michelle's honey buns looking particularly appealing. Which brings me finally to today's experience with crumpets. Crumpets, of course, which you know all about now from the preceding podcast. I have to say that I did not find the construction of crumpets a positive experience at all. Nor did Dylan the dog, and I'm not 100% convinced that I'm still married. Though Jane did ask me if she could help. All I could think of at the time was if she wouldn't mind hammering a large iron spike through my brain. The issue was the bloody crumpet rings. Getting the crumpet out of them was living hell. Also, although the recipe said, oh, cook 5 minutes on one side and 3 minutes on the other and you'd be fine, it was 20 plus minutes easy. And by the time they were ready, I could feel my brain dribbling out of my ear. It has to be said, they looked like poop, but tasted $1 million. Superb. A completely different experience from bought ones. But really, life is just too short. The pikelets were easier, of course, because they didn't have to use the rings, but not as nice, though, you know, fine. So look, We have finally reached the end of the buns thing. I must admit, I did laugh at one person who questioned our priorities with three episodes on buns compared to just one on the British Empire, which is, you know, a fair point. But hell, I like a good bun. Now, Fiona and I would like to finish off our bunscapade with a poll. Not whether buns should go into the cabinet, because, of course, that's a gimme, but on your favourite and least favourite bun. I shall start the voting off. You may add as many as you like to the poll and vote for as many as you like. Cheery bye.
Right. Thank you, me.
So, as we say every time, can I please remind you that Things That Made England has a Patreon page at patreon.com/TTME. We've got three tiers of membership: executive producer, official patron, and the hat going around. So anyone keen to support us can choose a tier that fits most wallets. But more than anything, folks, you'll be receiving our undying gratitude and a mention on the show for your support. We'll also be posting a few random bits and bobs for extra episodes. Okay, thanks very much for your contribution, everybody. Thank you very much for talking to us on Facebook and so on. I hope you enjoyed the show. And it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from...
Fiona. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England...
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England...